Howdy! Welcome to the Gateway to the Smokies podcast. This podcast is about America's most visited national park, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and the surrounding towns. This area is filled with ancient natural beauty, a deep storied history, and rich mountain cultures that we explore with weekly episodes. I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, a man of the world, but also with deep roots in these mountains. My family has lived in the Great Smokies for over 200 years. My business is in travel, but my heart is in culture. Today, we're going to talk about Lyric Mountain and Wood Song songwriting retreats. But first, a little bit overhead we got to talk about. First of all, this is my last podcast in New York City. I don't know, you know, I've been doing it between New York and North Carolina, but now me and my family, we're all moving down to Western North Carolina, and hopefully I can maybe have some of the podcasts out in my backyard, which is just a forest. So we'll see. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some sponsors. First, I want you to imagine a place evocative of motor courts of the past, yet modern and vibrant with a chic Appalachian feel, a place for adventure and for relaxation. Imagine a place where you can fish in a mountain heritage trout stream, grill the catch on a fire, and eat accompanied by fine wine or craft beers. Imagine a place with old-time music and world cultural sounds. There is no other place like the Metal Ark Motel in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Your Smoky Mountain adventures start with where you stay. Another sponsor is smokiesadventure.com. That's Smokies plural, adventure singular.com. The Smoky Mountains and surrounding areas is a vacation destination for all seasons. Some of the nation's best hiking trails, waterfalls, outdoor adventures, and family entertainment can be found right here. Start your adventure by using Smoky's Adventure to explore all the wonderful features of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Trails, waterfalls, Cades Cove, and more. Then check out all the awesome family attractions and entertainment you and your entire family can enjoy. And then if you have outdoor life events like weddings, honeymoons, romantic adventures, you can find more information about great places to have them. The goal of Smokies Adventure is to be the leading information portal for adventures and experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains. There's some events coming up. In Maggie Valley, there's a Maggie Valley Festival Grounds, which hosts world-class entertainment, events, arts, crafts, car shows, music, concerts. And so on May 31st through June 4th, they're having slingshots in the Smokies, which is, slingshots are a type of motorcycle. I think they're known for being three-wheelers. And the 8th annual slingshots in the Smokies, which is known as the Super Bowl of slingshots events, will be taking place in Maggie Valley. There'll be some new additions this year, and there'll be some music and shows and food and all sorts of stuff. So check it out on May 31st through June 4th. At the Metal Ark, June 3rd through the 5th, we're having the Plot Fest reunion weekend. The Plot Dog is a state farm. is the state dog of the North Carolina, and the family that brought the dog to the United States is the Plot family, who resided for the most part in Haywood County. And Bob Plot, who is the general manager of the Metal Ark Smoky Mountain Heritage Center, and he is leading an event to bring Plot Hound aficionados and fans together to celebrate the Plot Hound, where they will have an officially sanctioned UKC bench show and other competitions. There'll be special award ceremonies, raffles. There'll be roundtable discussions with the Plot breed icons. There'll be history programs. There'll be free barbecue dinner, and there'll be a traditional country music concert featuring Will Ritter and Tim McWilliams on Saturday night. This was a huge event last year. Everybody loved it. It takes you back in time to hound dogs on the farm, and you get to learn a lot about things and get some memorable story because everybody there is a storyteller. Also at the Metal Ark, on August 12th to 13th, we're having a songwriters camp. It's songwriters camp and concert with Grammy-winning artists Jim Lauderdale and Charles Humphrey III, along with award-winning artists such as Darren Nicholson, Clay Mills, and Charles Chamberlain. It's a two-day event of interactive songwriting instruction with world-class musicians, and a demo tape will be produced for each participant. And there'll be a concert of songs from the Road Band on Friday night, and a barbecue dinner and all-star concert on Saturday night. This is going to be a unique event like no other, and space will be limited to ensure individual attention is given to all participants. The price is $675 per person, includes all the activities and demo tapes and concerts and barbecue dinner. And then there's special pricing for rooms, and there'll be room packages as well. Call 828-926-1717 for details. And there's also a limited amount of concert tickets available for general public. And those are available on both Friday and Saturday night. And they're $30 each. And again, you can reserve your spot by calling 828-926-1717. So somebody knows about songwriting. Probably should be teaching at that songwriting camp for having her own. Is Louisa Branscombe. She is an Alabama native and is a Grammy Award-winning songwriter, musician, bandleader, teacher, psychologist, author, and pioneer trailblazer in the bluegrass music and clinical psychology fields. You don't hear those together very often. She has spent the past 33 years combining her talents and passions to lead songwriting events at her artist retreats, first at Woodsong Farm in North Georgia, and today at Lyric Mountain Songwriter Retreat near Asheville, North Carolina. She has mentored over 1,000 strong songwriters during her storied career. Hello, Louisa.
Good evening. It's nice to see you here.
Yes, good, good. Hey, I read somewhere that you started writing melodies at the age of 4. Now, I have a daughter about to turn 4 making up songs. Does that portend well?
I think, we hear melodies all around us. We just don't call the melodies, whether it's the refrigerator or the birds or, and I think, you know, when kids have the freedom to be tuned in, they're thinking in melodies from age 4. Yeah, I think it's great age.
That's great. Well, do you remember your first song, any from 4 or maybe soon after, where you composed something?
Yes, I do remember it. What it was about? Because it's not very profound.
Well, that's all right. What was it?
It was called Is She the Fishy? And the funny thing is, I actually have learned some lessons about songwriting from this song. And the song goes, Is She the Fishy? Couldn't be much thinner. So we had her for our dinner. Now, what you don't want to do is try to pick a word that rhymes just because it rhymes, like thinner and dinner. But the truth of the matter is, I think one of the key ingredients of songwriting is the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes, in this case, a fish, and feel compassion and think about what it is like from their point of view. So that's empathy is what that is. And I think whether we're writing about a tree or a fish, of course, they don't have shoes, but right. To be able to indwell a person whose life is different from yours and then write about them. I think teaching our kids to have the freedom to be tuned in and feel compassion for things around them is just a wonderful thing. And so that's what I learned as an adult from Is She the Fishy. It was at a birthday party and the poor fish was caught on a hook. And by the way, that's probably a metaphor too, caught on a hook, because the first thing you have to have in a song is a hook.
Well, that's good that you remember it. You know, I remember my first painting. You know, I do a little bit of art, and you don't want to get, you know, and there's one school of painting trying to evoke emotion, right? So I probably would probably consider myself in that school, but my first one was a little bit over the top. It was a flower with a tear on it.
it's over the top compared to what we seem to value these days in the culture, but it's really what's needed, I think, is, we look back on these stories and they seem kind of embarrassing, but really they have the ingredients for life, the ingredients for art's job in the world, which is to bring us back to the flower and the tear, which reminds me of the, you know, my favorite song was Davy Crockett, because I thought the idea of a frontier was just awesome. and only I thought it was fun tier. So
Oh.
my grandmother saw me playing on the rug, and I sat and I was singing Davy Crockett. I just definitely wanted to be a pioneer. And I called her in from the kitchen and said, "What's a fun tier?" And she said, "Well, like on this rug, everything past the edge of the rug, that's the frontier." And I said, "Grandmother, it's fun tier." And she said, and I said, "Oh, I thought you always have fun, and but there's still tears." And I've decided
My goodness.
there's some.
You were getting deep early, weren't you?
Trying to figure it all out, you know, I had this driving interest in trying to understand, I think, the unknown. So I don't know if I was really cut out to be a pioneer or not, but Rocket was my favorite song. And we look back on these things and we find, you know, we were probably right when we let it.
Well, it's funny that you say that. My two children, my 2.5-year-olds, actually 3.5. What am I talking about? That we named them, short, interesting names, but they were sort of classic names. I started singing a little tune to their names early on, and I still do it to this day. And I do it for both of them because I both want to have them, to try to figure out what it means and the sense of adventure implies. And it's to the tune of Davy Crockett. And I'll go, Henry Wyatt, King of the Wild Frontier, Anya Rose, Queen of the Wild Frontier. At
I'm sure that'll sink in at some level. You
some point, at some point, they'll figure out.
it's going to be, Joseph. Hopefully you'll like the unknown territory that they decide to jump into.
They are already doing it, let me tell you. Oh, well, listen, we have to take a break already. It's been interesting quite so far, and let's get back into getting into your clinical psychology and other things that you're doing, and then talk about your of course your music. All right, talk to you soon.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics in the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Howdy, this is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my guest, Louisa Branscombe. So, Louisa, you were born in the Adirondacks, and then you got raised mostly in Alabama, and you were a prodigy. At age 11, you won first place at the Alabama Student Music Composition Contest and performed with the Birmingham Symphony before an audience of 2,000. What was that like for a young girl?
Well, I sort of froze, and I weighed about 65, and the conductor was trying to get me to play louder, and I just got quieter and quieter, and at the end, he finished with a big flourish, and I don't remember the rest of the day, but actually, as I look back, you start looking back at some point in life, and you realize there are lessons in the memories that we keep for some reason, and I think that blessing in that was the idea that I might create something that had worth.
Wow. And
I was 11, and it was a tall order for me. I was very shy, but I learned about this thing that when you compose, it connects you to other people. And then there are all these musicians playing my song. And at some level, I think I must have learned about how music brings people together. And that's been a theme of what I've wanted to do in my life, all my life, really.
Now, was that classical music?
Yes, it was. Well, I mean, it had a melody. I mean, I'm very melodic. I was making melodies, but I played it on the piano, and it was supposed to be classical music. It wasn't very sophisticated, so.
Well, you're 11, but.
I don't think.
But you had a country, I heard you had a country music singing cousin in Texas named Ben, who gave you your first guitar. Yes. And he brought you into the country music world, didn't he?
Yes, he said, you can't play that Mexican guitar with nylon strings anymore. And I got back to college, and he had sent me a Martin 0021, and I still have that guitar. I love it.
Wow. And that's you were at Randolph Woman's College. Now it's known as Randolph College. Why did you go there?
I love the Appalachians. I think almost looking back, and actually it was y'all's topics for tonight that made me recognize that I've been like the little pin that you put down on your GPS. You know, I've been like this little pin that went up and down the Appalachians all my life, from sort of up in Virginia all the way down to the ridges where the mountains start in Alabama. And right now, Asheville, North Carolina. And I guess they must have sort of run through my soul. I wasn't aware that I was sort of everywhere I've been has been
Appalachia. That's kind of interesting. Yeah. You got a long way to go, because, you know, if you consider Appalachian going all the way up, 3,000 miles all the way. But not only that, like 100 million years ago, there was an even longer trail that broke in two when the continent split. And now the other part's over in Ireland and Scottish, and there's an international Appalachian Trail. So you've got a lot of places yet to live.
better get those Delta miles going.
Yeah, you better get those. So you ended up in North Carolina after you graduated. Why did you go to there specifically? And where was it?
Bluegrass
took you there.
I learned to play bluegrass at Randolph-Macon Women's College with a good friend named Sally Wingate, who was a great banjo player. And I just fell in love with it instantly. And so I got a flat pick and got my steel string guitar, and we had a little band, but I went to Winston-Salem. My first job was there at Bowman Gray School of Medicine, but I really went there to play bluegrass. It was a wonderful seat of bluegrass music, and I've kind of found out that each center of acoustic music has its own personality. So I learned an awful lot in the beginning from the Winston-Salem, Mount Airy, Hillsville, Galax, Fancy Gap players, and we played a lot of square dances, and that's how I got my chops. And I was just on fire to write. So I had written, I guess, about 500 songs that I had carefully at that time. And I had written Steel Rails. So that was in 1971.
But your first chart hit was actually in Japan, right?
Amazing how much you know about me that I almost forgot. It actually was. And it was a song called Blue Ridge Memories. Here we go again. I sang that on our first or second Boot Hill album. That was the band I had in Winston-Salem with Sam Sanger, and played with throughout the 70s.
Wow. So, but, you know, also at the same time, you made the decision to start education, psychology and education. What spurred you to do that?
Well, I had been on the road playing banjo for 10 years, and I decided that I just couldn't eat McDonald's hamburgers. And I sort that it was truly that I felt like I needed a break from the road. Being a woman in bluegrass in the 70s, it was incredible. incredible to be a bluegrass musician during that very creative time in bluegrass. Moving
well, forward. You and Sally were the first woman's bluegrass band, right?
We had one, certainly one of the first, and yeah. we Bluegrass Liberation, we were in 1971. And but regardless of gender, just being in bluegrass in the 70s was it just was so inspiring, and to be in that shift in the music, bringing more younger players, Sam Bush and others at that time. But I also felt like being on the road, I needed a little break to figure out who I was. And I always had a fascination about people and learning about people and kind of the human spirit. How do we survive it all? And so that's part of what led me to go back to school in psychology. But I kept playing. I've never stopped performing and being in a band.
Wow. So you graduated in 88 with a PhD, impressive, from Georgia State. Things. But then almost immediately you started getting real success. With their huge song Steel Rails with Alison Krauss recorded. That's, you wrote it in the 70s, but it became a big hit in 91, didn't it?
Well, I'm eternally grateful to what Alison did with the song in 1991. It had been recorded quite a few times by then, starting with Mel Tillis, believe it or not, who I had the great fortune to meet and spend the day with. And he published some of my songs. He recorded Steel Rails, but he didn't release it, although I do have it. And then it was also recorded by the McPeak Brothers and by my band, Boot Hill. And Alison heard my version of it and, unbeknownst to me, recorded it. And then I found out one very memorable night at the Station Inn, accidentally, that she had this hit on Steel Rails.
Oh, wow. And what do you think about her version, why it became such a hit, and how it actually brought so many new people to bluegrass?
In a word, because of Alison.
Oh, really? Yeah.
She's so beyond gifted, I don't think there's a word for it. And whenever she touches a song, you know, it turns to soul gold or something like that. You know, she sang the heart of that song. And it's a very simple song, and someone who can do simple elegance is Alison. She's always had been such a master of taste and knowing when not to sing, and she was so wise beyond her time. So to deliver a song that I always thought was sort of dorky and simple, and make it so, in her hands, so elegant. I think that's a big part of it. But I've also, you know, also thought a lot about why that particular song would appeal to people. And I'm still learning what it is that makes a song connect with other people. So, and in that song, for example, I think it's the images that the song has almost no conversation, almost no sentences like you speak to someone. It's just a string of images. Mm-hmm. And the powerful thing about an image is that it allows people to connect with this energy around the image if you don't have an image that's too tired or too obscure. If you find an image that's universal, like the lamp behind me on the mantle, which is an image that Tim O'Brien used brilliantly. The lamp is burning on the mantle, I believe, is one of his intro lines on a song. And it allows people to immediately connect with their emotions, and it bypasses the part of the brain that thinks too much. Mm-hmm. Song is married to time. It's not like any other art form because it's married to time. It passes tied to time. Mm-hmm. So for the listener, they have to be able to get your song as it goes by. Think of it as a train with windows. They have to get every window as it goes by, because if they get lost, they miss part of your song. Mm-hmm. The beauty of a song that's mostly images is people can sort of go into their own reverie about what those images mean to them. So I asked Alison once, what was the image that, or what drew her to the song, since I was the last to know. And she said it was the line, winding through the trees like a ribbon in the wind. And so I always learn from my songs by people giving me feedback.
Well, that's cool. So I mean, it's very interesting to me because right at this, about the same time that you've gotten your PhD in clinical psychology, and you also started your first songwriting camp, right? What was it, the Wood Song Farmer Songwriter Retreat in North Georgia, and there's a history of musicians getting their PhDs. Like I think Dr. John Starling, with the classic Seldom Seen band, gave up touring because of that. He pursued his professional degree more than he was pursuing. But you seem to have managed to work at both of them simultaneously for the next 30 some years. How did you manage that? Why didn't you choose one, and how did you manage it?
I think that's a valid question. And I'd probably say that my heart had two directions, and to leave either one, this desire to connect with people and learn about the resilience of the human spirit through being a clinical psychologist, and also very interested in creativity and how do people transform life. Life is hard for everyone. So mm-hmm. I think art is one way we transform it. And then the other side of me, I think music is in my bones. I mean, my father took me to blues joints in Birmingham on the other side of what we used to say, the other side of the tracks, where mom didn't know he was taking me because he knew a lot of the people in those clubs, where I was so lucky to be touched by the authenticity of the blues in the African-American people in Birmingham who sang in these dives. And my father knew some of them because he worked with them. They had TB and some of the illnesses that he treated. But my dad played harmonica. He played blues harmonica, and he played stride piano. So and we would walk in, and I was 12 or 13, and they'd go, "Hey, Doc," and Dad would sit in and play with them. And again, it's a story I look back on and think, I learned something. Music joins us together. It's much more important how we're alike in life than how we're different. And seeing my dad surrounded by so much love, and the love that he had for other people through his work, mm-hmm. being a health provider, and then through his music, I guess I tried to carry on and wear both hats myself. Right.
I think that's lovely, and it makes me think that maybe we should have our politicians sing their positions and talk about them.
Require them, and we should require them to write a song the right way. So we know who they are.
All right, we have to take another break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about your songwriting camps.
Hey, Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my guest, Louisa Branscombe. And I think we have to do everything twice right now, right? We got commercials twice. We got intros twice. What else can we talk about twice? But anyway, we'll move on. How's that? All right. So, Louisa, in 1987, mentioned before, you started the Woodsong Farm Songwriters Retreat in North Georgia. So what was the concept and how did you come to own the farm and or locate your retreats there?
Well, I probably have to be honest and say that in my life, a lot of times I do things simply because I'm drawn to them or moved by some kind of passion about it. But then I don't figure out the concept until later. So when I look back, I know that for me, when I'm I do my best creating when I'm in nature, or at least surrounded by nature in a beautiful setting where all of the stress of life seems way far away. And for me, that was my farm. And I felt like my farm gave me this connection to my own humanity. You know, when we're not stressed and we're not having to be anxious and afraid about things around us, that really helps dissolve a lot of our defenses where we can be in touch with what makes us most human. And those are usually, that's usually the best place to write from. So I think I was probably wanting to share the farm as a place that nurtured people as writers. And there's something about the past as well. Like when we're connected to people in the past who have had a hardworking work ethic, which is true of the Appalachians and true of North Georgia is in the southern, you know, the tip of the Appalachians. With cotton farming, that my farm was a cotton farm. It was 150 years old and had many relics around me. I was the first new family to own it. So it gave me a connection deeper than my life, you know, to other lives where music was so important, where the two girls in the family sang Listen to the Mockingbird and put salt on their, you know, they licked salt out of a spoon because they thought it made him sing better. And when they played on my album, there was like salt all over the floor. But, you know, these things that brought me back to the essential Appalachian heritage, like a song, like Listen to the Mockingbird, they grounded me in my own creativity. So though I've tried to be newer or have my own unique way of writing, like we all do, I'm very aware that it comes from this thread that goes deep into the heart of the mountains that I come from, and that's a big part of me. So I try to bring that setting to other writers and that cultural history. We don't have to talk about it. You can just look at like the old ironing board in the corner over here. Am I going the right way?
Right.
Here it is over there. A reminder of when life was not easier, but more transparent, simpler, that we all need. I think it helps us reconnect with ourselves.
Is that what was the, so bringing people into a sort of a elemental environment was part of the plan for the songwriting retreat? It was actually a real retreat from everything.
A real retreat. And then we always had a theme that somehow was designed to make a place that was nurturing and inspirational for the songwriters, and I think that the farm itself was the biggest teacher without being spelled out. When people, and I've had this feedback from songwriters now for, you know, 35 years, is that when they cross the threshold to the farm, they felt in another world that was safe and inspiring, with nature all around and the songs of the birds and the songs of the tractor in the distance and the train in the distance. All of these things let people dissolve these normal defenses that we have to protect us from the world and let us connect more quickly with each other and trust each other. There was just an implicit trust that the farm, I think, gave. And that allowed us to be better songwriters and to listen to each other's work and to be inspired, because you didn't have to try to protect yourself right in the world, away from the real world.
And did you combine your psychology into your retreats as well?
but not in an intentional way. Again, I think looking back, some of the things that I hope make me a good teacher as a songwriter instructor are the same ingredients that have made me interested in connecting with people through sharing people's journeys as a psychologist and understanding people's journeys. I feel more a facilitator than a teacher. And I think that's when we're our best, is when we're listening to the other person and trying to understand what they're trying to say, whether it's a conversation or a song or someone sharing their journey and their hardship. I worked a lot with veterans, and I worked with veterans at a very young age because I felt like I was out singing songs about peace during the Vietnam War, and I wasn't very grown up, and I didn't really realize what the hardship of war was. And so I wanted to pay it forward by working with veterans as a psychologist, and I learned so much about how people transform hardship, because veterans know about that better than most of us. Mm-hmm. And so I was often inspired, or I worked with a veteran to help them tell their own story. And I would say, hey, if you put that in one line, what would that line be? And that's the hook. And any of us, you can do this yourself. If I ask you right now, what is one line that captures how you are in this moment? Hey, why don't I'll put you on the spot, Joseph. What would it be? And, you know, six words or less.
I'm in transition.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on, or transition is a little long for a title.
Well, I'm moving on to a new phase of life.
Yeah. You know, new phase of life. There you have it. New phase of the moon. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the eclipse is over. New phase mm-hmm. of life. So then you work with those images. And but back to something more important, which is, as humans, we get so cut off from our humanity. Because we're so busy trying to protect ourselves from that onslaught of information and the hardship around us and all around in the world. And so we need these places where we can let down and find our creativity and find our own humanity. And that's the thread that connects us to some universal experience or image that's what a song touches other people with. So there's an intimate connection between being safe in the natural world, I believe, to being creative.
So you've several times here you've connected music to healing experience, internal experience that produces a better world and things like that. Do you have, at your retreats, do you have specific examples of where people have been changed?
I've been very touched by some of the stories that I get after my retreat. And many times I've heard, you know, I thought I was coming to learn to write songs and I left transformed. And now who I am is different. So how I write songs is very different. Mm-hmm. And that always touches me to hear. Again, I just try to create a place. But I'm pretty focused on how I do that. I don't allow like a lot of interference coming in from other things. And I try to establish a setting of trust. I've also heard that people came to... they thought to learn about songwriting, but they felt healed from something in their life in the process of connecting with what they wanted to say in the song. Right. So I think that I've heard a lot that the songs they wrote at my retreat were transforming for them. And through this, I've learned that not only do we transform life by taking a little piece of it and putting it in a song, but our songs transform us. And people don't talk about that much, but I have learned so much by listening to my songs. Mm-hmm. That might sound kind of like, well, are you listening to yourself? Not really, in my way of thinking. Because again, I think all of this is creating an open channel through something bigger than me to come through. Something about whatever your spirituality is, the collective unconscious or the universal human condition or God. When that's flowing, because I'm open enough for it to flow, then often I'm surprised by what my songs say. and they make me feel better, or they make me know myself better. So I think maybe that's the thing people are picking up on when they say that about the retreats that I have.
Well, I think that, you know, I think that retreats are actually incredibly important for people to take in their lives, right? Especially ones that are dealing around creativity. I mean, I've had some, you know, some fundamental experiences. You know, after my second wife died and we'd been married for 20 years, I went to a Joseph Campbell's, you know, Hero's Journeys retreat, which was about exploring creativity in life. But at one point they had us do a funeral for something we wanted to let go. And, you know, I'd just a year earlier done a funeral for my wife, and it was, I got into thinking about that. But what I ended up doing a funeral for was for the Mr. and Mrs. Joseph McElroy, the identity that I'd had for 20 years, which I hadn't let go, and I needed to say goodbye to it properly to move on in my life. And it was a transcending experience. And that was, you know, a creative retreat. I think what you describe here can produce that kind of profound effect for people, I believe.
Yeah. You just said it brilliantly, and not coincidentally, I'm hugely influenced by Joseph Campbell's model of the hero's journey. And I believe that it takes a lot of courage to engage with when we're in a huge life transition. I'm in one right now, so I don't feel courageous every day, but I do feel like, at that point in the journey, when we're in the dark night of the soul, like we're in the middle of change and we're not to the next place yet, like there is a death of ourselves. And we don't get to hold on to, you know, we're not like those mountain climbers and they're in a sling and somebody's going to pull the rope. It feels like we're falling off the mountain, and because we can't use the same solutions that we had before because we're changing. And in the model of the hero's journey, you have to have that free fall. And then you find what it is you need to say and what it is you need to do in your life that moves your journey forward. And we have to be willing to take the risk of that, or like back to Davy Crockett, go into the wild frontier of our souls to do that. And it's very uncomfortable. And this whole last 2.5 years has been very uncomfortable because I myself found I couldn't stay stuck, because how I was, the world was changing too much. And so I had to find a new part of me to be with the new world.
Is that why you moved here to Asheville with a new place?
In part, yes. And yes, I wanted some different things in my life than I could find in the rural area that I was in Georgia. But I also, I think the pandemic was a big part of it. It happened after I moved. So I have not done a workshop in 2 years, not just because of the pandemic, but because I didn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. And I also haven't written very many songs. So actually, it was a song that I wrote about a week ago that kind of clarified to me where I'm at. It's like when you write a song, it's kind of like the guy on the top of the mountain and he's putting a stake. This is me right now. I'm on top of this mountain. I know who I am. And I'm fascinated by these mountain climbing movies. Go figure. I watch Netflix, people climbing mountains all the time. But, you know, because I think I like to understand these amazing things we do as human beings that do bring out our core self. And so once I finally had the images come to me in this new song, which is the one we talked about me playing, I was ready to do a retreat. So after I wrote this song about a week ago, and I don't even know if it's a good song yet, it might not be, but it clarified, it spoke to me and said, this is who you are, this is where you are, and now I can authentically bring people back together again and do a new retreat, and I know what we'll be talking about.
Wow. I think that's a good illustration of what artists go through their life having, is those moments where they feel lost and then they are able to find their way back again in a different way. So that's fabulous. So you now are having new retreats at I'm losing the name of it right this second.
What's the Lyric Mountain.
Lyric Mountain. And that's going to be in the Asheville area?
Yes, I'm sitting at Lyric Mountain right now, and we're in Swannanoa, which is close to Asheville and Black Mountain. And it's a little mountain farm instead of a big old expensive Georgia cotton farm, and it's lovely. And we've been working on the main house here all year and getting it ready. So
well, now I'm gonna be in Asheville, I'm gonna have to come out and visit, right?
I hope you will.
Yeah. Bring the kids out to the farm. They love that sort of thing. So when's the first retreat?
I'm thinking that it'll be the second weekend in July, July 8th weekend. And my friends, Johnny and Jeanette Williams, who are wonderful Appalachian players, all levels of songs from traditional to cutting edge. Johnny and Jeanette are from Danville. They're coming down. They've been on my retreats for many, many years. And we'll have a small group, and it'll be an experiential workshop and plenty of time to share songs and enjoy the new setting. And maybe the new setting will inspire us in some different ways. We'll probably talk about that too.
Well, that would be great. I mean, that I look forward to hearing how that comes out. So, you mentioned that you had a song to sing. Do you want to sing that song?
I'd be glad to try it out on you. My process with this song is, how do you write? How can you do justice in a song to everything going on right now around us? We're in a new era. I think sometime in the darkness of the pandemic, we all got catapulted into a new era, and we're waking up to what it even is. We don't even know how to be yet. It's such a profound quantum change. And so I didn't know how to write a song to capture that. And then I realized, go back to steel rails. It's just images that we can connect with that make us feel compassion and a sense of meaning. And that's all this song is a couple of those images. But one of them came from a show I saw on the icebergs melting. Another came from the newscast. I saw it on Anderson Cooper. You may have seen it on any channel. It's a little girl in Ukraine standing on the table and singing. She was 5 years old, 7 years old, and this bombed out basement with all these people crowded in with wounds and bleeding, exhausted and tattered. I'm sure a lot of people saw this beautiful news clip, and you saw the spirit of humanity just wake up in everyone in that room when that little girl started singing. And one more time, I was reminded about the incredible power of music to transform and heal. So that's in this song too, and it's called Gold in the Dark. I don't know what's come over me. I just can't do nothing right. Seems like the world is burning likewise, and the clocks stop turning clockwise. We're all ships lost in the night. I'm at the edge of the mountain, need a rock I can count on, need your face at the window of my heart. There's no winning when the war's won, and you and I don't need one, and you're my gold in the dark. Big white bear was running out of time. She was swimming for her life. Like every homeless soul with nowhere else to go, all she needed was a little patch of ice. At the edge of the mountain, need a rock I can count on, need your face at the window of my heart. Cause there's no winning when the war's won, you and I don't need one, and you're my gold in the dark. Bombed out town, we'll just call somewhere when everything was hopeless and so wrong. A 7-year-old girl, she stood up on a chair there. She began to sing this song. I'm at the edge of the mountain, need a rock I can count on, need your face at the window of my heart. 'Cause there's no winning when this war's done, and you and I don't need one, and you're my gold in the dark. You're my gold in the dark.
Oh my goodness, that was fantastic. Oh, thank you so much. That was an honor for having that played on this show. There's not really much to say after that. it's been wonderful talking to you. Is there ways people can find out more about what you do and information to follow up from this program, like a website or something like that?
Website's Louisa Branscombe online, and my Facebook page is, of course, I'm visible on Facebook, and my email is branscombemusic@gmail.com, and I'd love to hear from anyone about anything related to songwriting. We're a community, and I've never met a songwriter I didn't really like, or anyone who's interested in helping us songwriters and being part of the community. And I sure appreciate what you guys are doing too.
Oh, thank you. It's we are a community of art and culture, and it's sort of special. So this is the Gateway to the Smokies podcast. We're on facebook.com/gatewaytothesmokies podcast. We're also on talkradio.nyc, where the live broadcast goes out to many people in New York City and other and around the world. The talkradio.nyc network is an interesting network. I recommend going to look at the many other programs they have. They're all live podcasts, ranging from self-help to small business to other travel shows. I have another one on here as well called Wise Content Creates Wealth, which is about marketing in the age of AI and content. And next week, we'll have another. Next week is a rerun because I am moving next week down to Asheville, North Carolina. But then the week after that, we'll have the live program from on Tuesdays for Gateway to the Smokies from 6 until 7 p.m. And again, thank you, Louisa, for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you again in the near future.
Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.